Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
What do we got here? Let's say this is the Friday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack, and, well, you know, I did mention it was Friday, right?
Start spreading the news.
Oh, you know what that music means by now. Schomburg Stu is here. Stu, how are you?
All right. Looking forward to watching the Blackhawks and the Bulls tonight.
Yes. Oh, wait. Yeah, I don't think we're going to get to do that, are we? They're all done.
They're gone.
So, you know, hey, if you'd like to call in and talk to Stu and I, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Now, anything else you need? Head on over to sportstimeradio.com. The blogs go up over there on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so look for something popping up there sometime tomorrow morning. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, go ahead and click that link, follow it over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, hey, we'd greatly appreciate that. But don't forget we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, sadly, we still don't have Stu on Twitter, but feel free to reach out to me at Burke Time, and I will pass any messages along to Stu that you have. So, all right, Stu. Well, we had a trade today in Major League Baseball. Apparently, the Brewers just can't seem to settle on shortstop. You know, they started off the year with Orlando Arcia. And I believe they ended up, did they send him down? Or no, they traded him to the Braves. That's right. And it looked like Luis Urias, who they got in the in a trade with San Diego, was going to take over. Well, that didn't seem to work out with them either. So they've now shipped off two relievers, J.P. Verizon is what I'm going with, and Drew Rasmussen to Tampa Bay. In return, they get Trevor Richards, and obviously the key piece here is shortstop Willy Adames. I don't know. I guess the Brewers just don't have a lot of great luck at short. Now, you know, Adames is a really good defender, but he's not much of a hitter. He was hitting a whopping 197 this year, and even for his career, he's just a 254 hitter. So they're not getting a ton of offense, but they should be able to get a guy who can at least handle the position, right? Or we hope?
Well, they're hoping, I'm sure. That I didn't even know about the trade until you mentioned it to me, but they're getting a good defender. And I don't know, they have been kind of disappointing this year. They're what, a couple of games below .500? They're below the Cubs and maybe tied or very close to tied with Cincinnati. So it hasn't been a good season for them so far. And I'm not sure this is going to jumpstart it all that much.
Yeah, well, you know, and the odd thing is they're kind of acquiring a light-hitting shortstop, and Urias was hitting .205, so, I mean, they pretty much had a light-hitting shortstop. Of course, he has made 9 errors in his games already there at short, and that was part of the problem they had with Arcia. He was a little better offensively, but defensively he was struggling. So I guess we'll see what worked out for them. But
for a short season, so for 30 game or 40 yeah. game season, that's way too many
yeah.
to be acceptable.
You know, and then of course, you know, when Tampa traded a shortstop, everybody got excited because, you know, the number one prospect in baseball is Wander Franco, who is 20. Yeah, he's 20. And he's been with Tampa Bay now for, I think, what, they drafted him in 2018. Was he, let me see if it listed here. Was he the number one pick or what was he? I want to say he was number one overall. Or, well, he was from the Dominican, so maybe he was a free agent signing. But, of course, they were all excited that he was going to come up and take over. Well, you know, this is his first year in AAA, and it doesn't look like Tampa Bay's going to be calling him up. And he is doing really well down there. They have another prospect by the name of Taylor Walls, who is the player who is actually getting the call up. So you will see him at shortstop when things open up for Tampa Bay here. I don't know if it'll be tonight or how it'll work out for them. I don't know. Let me see if maybe their lineup has been released, and I can tell you if he has made it up or not. But yeah, I mean, you know how, you know, the media gets with this. Oh, let's bring this kid up, even though he's 20 and he's only got about 30 career games in AAA. We're going to bring him up and run him right up there against Major League pitching. So,
well, whatever they do, it seems to work for Tampa because they're having another decent season again.
So, and yeah, it is Joey Wendell at shortstop for the Rays tonight. So there you go. And I wasn't sure they got a ton back in this trade, but being that they're relievers, you know, Tampa Bay kind of works magic with these guys no matter who they are. And the name I can't pronounce here, Frierson is what I went with. He's made quite a few appearances, 21 games, and he does have an ERA of 3.26. So, you know, he's been, you know, getting people out. And then Rasmussen, on the other hand, he's appeared in 15 games. His ERA is a little higher at 4.24. But again, you know, this is what Tampa Bay does. They take these guys and they, you know, turn them into things people didn't think they could do. So,
is their intent to be take one of these guys and make him their setup relief pitcher coming in the seventh?
You know, it's so hard to tell with Tampa Bay because their roles are just so mixed that you never know, you know, who does what. I mean, just when you think that, you know, this guy is going to do this job, somebody else comes in and does it. So, you know, like they have four different guys with saves already this year. And as I go a little farther down, it's actually five. So I would be interested to know if any other team has five different guys, you know, with that have picked up saves for them. So, you know, and all their bullpen ERAs are just fantastic. The highest one is 3.38. So, you know, they know how to control the narrative out there. And, you know, hell with this team, you never know. One of these guys could end up being, you know, what they call the opener now, come in and pitch an inning or two, and then that's it. So,
yeah, right now they're still, what, 3 or 4 games over 500 at this stage of the season, aren't they?
I believe they are. Yeah, they're actually 26-19, just a game behind the Red Sox in the East, and a half game ahead of the Yankees. So,
yeah, a lot of people were wondering what happened to the Yankees, and now they're right back in the race, and
yeah,
they're only in mid-May. So they'll be a force
before
said and done.
You know, that's because, like idiots, the media panicked after 15 games because they were all picking the Yankees to go to the World Series. So,
yeah, and it still might happen.
You know,
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. You know, when you'd stupid stuff like that after 15 games, it rarely, if ever, actually holds on. You know, the team they should have been panicking about more and more looks like the Minnesota Twins. But, you know, that's that.
Yeah, and I think we emailed about this. It's a funny thing about the Twins. When they have a bad season, they have a bad season. They're not the kind of team that starts out bad and makes a huge comeback at the end and becomes a factor in the race. When they start out bad, they end up bad, too. That's been my experience following them in years past.
So yeah, and, you know, it's just the, you know, kind of the oddest thing with them. You know, they were a big-time trendy pick to win the Central. You know, there were a lot of people on the White Sox bandwagon and a lot of people on the Twins bandwagon. And for whatever reason, it went in the tank for them. You know, and I know
one of those people, by the way. I think I was one of those people that predicted them that they would win the Central Division this season. That's another incorrect pick on my part, it looks like, right now, at least.
Yeah, and you know, I know a lot of the trouble they've ran into is their starting pitching has really struggled. You know, if my computer would work a little faster, I would tell you how much it struggled, but it's taken a little bit. You know, Jose Berrios has been solid at the top of the rotation, and, you know, Michael Pineda hasn't been bad, but, you know, J.A. Hopp, Matt Shoemaker, and Kenta Maeda have been a disaster, and you're not going to beat a ton of teams when three of your five starters are in trouble. So
I don't think their bullpen has been all that great either.
Well, you know, Colomé's been better as of late, and Taylor Rogers has been really good. But, yeah, other than that, you know, I know, like, they just lost Tyler Duffy to a three-game suspension. Apparently he threw behind a hitter, and so he just bought a three-game suspension. But, like, guys like Randy Dobnik, who were expected to contribute, haven't. You know, they brought up Derek Law, and he hasn't worked out. You know, Hansel Robles all of a sudden seemed to find that form that made the Angels think he could be a closer. But, again, as hot and cold as he's been throughout his career, I don't know if that's something they can count on. So, you know, it's just been kind of strange for them. And you know, unfortunately, it's, you know, it looks like it may turn a what was supposed to be a big year into not a big year.
I think that suspension, by the way, you're talking about was the one when he threw behind a Mercedes. The unwritten rule syndrome.
Oh, was that the guy he threw behind? I didn't remember who he threw behind. I just heard about the suspension.
Yeah,
so.
I think that's what it was. When Mercedes hit the 3-0 pitch against a position player and hit a home run and broke the unwritten rule and and the manager, of course, is old school. La Russa didn't like that either. And now there's a division in the White Sox as to saying, who was he right in doing it or was he wrong? And what's your thought on that?
Well, unfortunately, my thought is that Tony La Russa came off like a complete idiot. And, you know, the sad part about it is in the end, you're talking about a team here that could win. And he screwed up any chemistry whatsoever he had with this team, because, you know, if I'm a player on his team, I no longer trust him or want to work with him, no matter what his resume says. Now, you know, luckily for La Russa, he's completely safe. He could run naked onto the field and Jerry Reinsdorf wouldn't fire him. So he's got nothing to worry about. And, you know, basically what he showed was that the game has passed him by since he hasn't been managing. So,
yeah, he's made some mistakes because he didn't understand the new rule, especially that fiasco that took place in one of those extra inning games that may have caused the White Sox a victory.
Yep. So, yeah, he's turned out to be incredibly clueless. You know, and that's the question now: is the team winning because of him or in spite of him? Is where the question kind of falls. You know, and I mean, I would like to think that he's still a good manager, but I just I don't I think he's got to learn to shut his mouth. You know, because, I mean, he had player after player after player come out against him. And he still didn't get it, and he kept talking about it. And it was like, buddy, shut up. But no, he just, oh, no, you know, this is, you know, and he used words like, what was it, respect, and I forgot what the other term he used, sportsmanship. That was it. And I was like, dude, shut up. You know, it's a different game. And it's clear that he just doesn't get it. The one good thing he did was at least he was smart enough to not take Mercedes out of the lineup because Abreu wasn't playing at the time. So, yeah, you know, that was a big plus. And, you know, again, you're going to bench the guy who's leading the American League in hitting because he did something that nobody else looked at as being wrong except you.
The only thing in his favor, I would say, is that everybody forgot that he's a rookie. This is his first year, really, in the majors. So,
yeah.
I think he should be forgiven for breaking the unwritten rule. I mean, who cares? It'll affect the outcome of the game one way or the other.
Yeah. Well, you know, and to be fair, if you want to fine him for missing the sign because La Russa gave him the take sign, if you want to fine him for that, I don't have a problem with that. That's part of baseball. But to punish him for, you know, and the way La Russa has came out about this has been all completely wrong. You know, again, he's just come off like a complete idiot. So it's just been incredibly stupid, and everybody has came out against him. He's the only one on that side of what it was. Now, if it would have been a regular pitcher, there may have been an issue here. And that's what one of the players who commented against him, it may have been Lance Lynn, said, you know, if they wanted to get him out, they should have had a pitcher and they're not a position player. So, I don't have a problem with it at all.
Nor do I. And I think I emailed you this. Do you remember years ago when Chris Bryant hit a Grand Slam home run in a one-sided game against a position player and no one said two words about it?
Well, you know, I think yesterday in the Giants-Reds game, one of the Giants homered late in the game off a Reds position player, and nobody said anything about it. It didn't even come up. So it's kind of like, okay, you know. So, again, if La Russa would have just kept his mouth shut, which for whatever reason he couldn't do, we wouldn't even be discussing this. Nobody would.
That's right.
But he was such a jackass, you know, I mean, maybe because I don't think he has his license anymore because he got another DUI, you know, that he's having, you know, he's got to find something else to do. So he made a complete ass out of himself.
Yeah, he took the unwritten rule to the extreme. Why? Because he's such an old school type of manager?
I guess. You know, because he was the only one who saw it as being disrespectful. Nobody else did.
No. He's made other mistakes this season, too. But even with all those mistakes, the White Sox are still in first place. And despite a couple of horrendous injuries that would have crippled most teams, and they're still hanging in there. And I guess they'll be a force throughout the season. Maybe Cleveland might be the only competition that they're going to have now. Looks like Minnesota's a non-factor.
Yeah, you know, I mean, in reality, La Russa's been a clueless boob and probably should have been fired. You know, just because of the mistakes he's made. But, again, that's just not going to happen. You know, there's absolutely no way Jerry Reinsdorf gets rid of this guy.
No,
you know, the only hope the White Sox have is that they win the World Series and he retires again.
Maybe they could bring back a Renteria.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know where he ended up working.
I don't even think he's working now. I don't think he's signed with anybody else, last I heard.
I'm sure.
I'd like to find out one way
or the
other.
No, he's not managing, but I'm sure he got a job somewhere.
Yeah, it's the... He had a couple of bad breaks as a manager. He never really did a bad job for both sides of town and didn't do much good. in the firing department.
Yeah, no, he, you know, he was a winner with each team, and that didn't matter.
No, not at all.
So, you know, but yeah, it's just one of those, you know, one of those guys who, you know, for whatever reason, teams didn't think he could take them to the promised land. So, you know what? You know, at least he had multiple years with the White Sox. He only had the 1 year with the Cubs.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly right. Yeah, I'd like to find out if he's hooked up with any other team as a third base coach or first base coach. But the last I heard, and of course this is before the season started, he had not hooked up with any other team.
Yeah, I would think for sure he was working somewhere, but you know, the more I look here, I don't know if he is. So maybe he's taking a year off.
Yeah, he wasn't paid all that much as a manager, but I think he was paid sufficiently that he could afford to take a year or two off without any problems.
Yeah, well, you know, and he did have a playing career as well. So,
true.
You know, he may have, something there from that. Who knows? But, yeah, I thought for sure, you know, with being the baseball guy that he was, I thought for sure he would, you know, somebody would have grabbed him and just been like, hey, come on in, you know, you can coach here or coach there or whatever they had going on, but
maybe he's just waiting and possibly would another team that they fire their manager actually consider him as a viable replacement?
You know, I don't know if they would bring him in as a man. I mean, obviously it would depend on the team, but you know, I have a feeling if he gets another job, it's going to be with another young, developing team because that seems to be his forte. You know,
yeah.
He's able to, you know, tutor young players and, you know, that and that's that.
Yeah, my first thought was maybe he would be an ideal manager for Miami.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, I mean, there's definitely teams out there that could use him. You know, we'll just have to kind of see if or when he gets another shot.
Yeah, one thing is his advantage if he does go to a team like Miami is that he's fluent in both English and Spanish. I mean, he's very, very good in both languages, and that might help him a little bit.
Yeah, you know, that you know, well, that's always, you know, especially like with a team like the White Sox that had all the Cuban-born players, you know, that had to be huge to be able to come in and talk to them,
right,
you know, on your own. So
I thought that maybe we're talking about Tony La Russa. Isn't he also fairly fluent in Spanish?
I believe so. I thought I heard that before. I don't know for a fact, but I think he is. So, you know, I would have to say I'm sure he is. Because I remember when he was with the Cardinals, I kind of vaguely remember Mike Matheny mentioning it in an interview about how La Russa did it so he could communicate with players. So Matheny did it as a manager so he could communicate.
Right, and let's face facts, in today's baseball world, that there's so many players from the Dominican Republic and Latin players that play the game, that it would be in your best interest as a manager to speak their language.
Yeah, and you know, the even bigger plus is a lot of the Japanese or, you know, Asian players that come over from overseas also speak Spanish. So
yeah,
you can actually communicate.
That's very interesting, though, that so you're saying that Ohtani, for example, can speak Spanish as well as Japanese.
Yeah, I don't know if he's one of them, but we learned that in wrestling, when you get the Japanese wrestlers who wrestle in Mexico or Lucha Libre anywhere, they all speak Spanish. They speak Japanese and Spanish.
Yeah, I'm sure they've – the ones who have made a decent career and have competed both in Japan and Mexico, I guess it would be to their advantage to be able to speak in either one of those two languages.
Yeah. So, no, it's huge. You know, and there's a lot of places, like if you go to Mexico, a lot of places won't hire you unless you speak Spanish. They won't allow you to wrestle there unless you actually speak the language. So, you know, like when you see the American guys there with the long runs that get there, they all speak Spanish.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. And, yeah, some Americans have made a nice career out of competing there, I think. Didn't Vampiro, for example, wrestle quite a bit in Mexico?
Oddly, he's Canadian. So,
but I believe he did wrestle extensively there, though.
He did to start his career. That's where he got his start and his big break. And the humorous thing about Vampiro, a story I don't know how many people actually know, he was brought in for an interview by WWE because they were considering hiring him. It was WWF at the time. And the gimmick he pitched Vince McMahon was the Undertaker gimmick. And obviously they didn't hire Vampiro to do it, but they brought in Mark Callis to take over the character. So they liked the gimmick, but I guess they didn't like the guy.
I wonder what Vampiro thought about them using the gimmick that he suggested for somebody else.
To be fair, this is wrestling, and so this is just the story coming from Vampiro. We don't know how much validity it is to it because it's professional wrestling.
Yeah.
So we got to see how it goes. But yeah, you know, I mean, if I was a guy like him, yeah, I would be a little less than happy thinking, you know, here you go. I gave you this idea that basically went through the roof, and you gave it to somebody else.
Yeah, maybe one of the things against him was maybe he wasn't really exactly the size that the WWF / WWE really likes as a competitor.
So, you know, I mean, he did go on to have a really nice, solid career with WCW, and, you know, he's still working now in, you know, different programs. He doesn't wrestle, but, you know, every once in a while, but he manages or does commentary. You know, he was the Lucha Underground commentator for, I think, just about the entire run of the show.
Yeah, he has managed to have a nice career other than wrestling.
So, yeah, you know, it's just one of, you know, one of those things. But, yeah, you know, there's a lot of, you know, the wrestlers who, you know, get what really is their first big break or their first taste of main eventing in Canada, you know, that Taya Valkyrie, who's now, God, what is she, Frankie Monet or some stupid name the WWE gave her because they have to own the name, so you can't use yours. She got all her big breaks in Mexico.
It's a lot of great experience there, too, which I'm sure helped her out. But, of course, then coming over from there to the WWE, you have a whole new style to learn.
Yeah, well, WWE is a whole new style from just about everybody. You know, they do their own thing and they stick with their own thing and that's it. So.
Yeah, some can adapt to it and some can't.
Yeah. But, yeah, and I did see apparently WWE finally did release that guy, Velveteen Dream, who was accused of sexual assault by a boy? I hope I got. I believe it was a male, and I want to say it may have been an underage male. I'm not sure about the second part, but I believe it was a male. And you know, they put him on the shelf for a while. They brought him back for just a couple of matches, and then I saw that he was part of a group that was released. They released about 8 or 10 guys the last few days, so they're cutting some more money.
Primarily NXT employees, I assume.
Yeah, a lot of training center people. They let a couple referees go. They let the the referee go that had the pro, oh, good Lord, I forgot what group he supported. It might have been, what is it, AFTA? Is that, I don't know if it's pronounced or, but, you know, he, I believe he was a Donald Trump guy, so they let him go. And then, yeah, they cut another ref, and then they cut a lot of people who weren't even on, hadn't even appeared on NXT TV yet. So.
Yeah, the purge is on its way. And oh, but I just happened to think about this. I just thought of an English wrestler who had a great career in the WWE, who was also very fluent in Spanish, Laurie Alfred Hayes.
Yes. So.
Very, 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 very,
yeah. Well,
good
he was a wrestler. He wrestled all over the world, didn't he?
Yeah, he, I believe he also competed in the AWA, if I remember correctly, and among other organizations.
Yeah, you know, I remember more as a manager in the NWA. But yeah, I don't remember. You know, he did the occasional wrestling thing here or there, but you didn't tell me this one here. This one popped up when I looked up his name. In 1972, he defeated Dory Funk Jr. for the NWA Championship, but the decision was changed when Funk's father attacked the referee after the match.
Yeah, who would that be?
Well, Dory Funk Sr. So.
Oh, no, I'm saying, but who was the wrestler who won the title and had a decision reversed?
Hayes.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know that. I knew he had a long career, but there have been so many instances of decisions like that, and the average fan would never find out about it. There was a famous story,
yeah.
In, of course, in I don't know if it was Dominican Republic or not, but when Ric Flair decided to lose the title to a wrestler because he knew he wouldn't get out of the arena alive if he didn't do that. And that wrestler...
Oh, just, yeah, that was Puerto Rico, I think.
Was it Puerto Rico? But the wrestler just... That wrestler, yeah, who beat him and never took the title, defended the title, was just... I think he just passed away recently.
Yeah, you know, I remember the story, but I don't remember who the wrestler is. But, yeah, it looks like Hayes wrestled from the looks like the late 50s to the 80s before he gave up his actual in-ring career. And then he started with WWE in 82 to 95. So he had a really long career there.
Yeah, and he was a good announcer, too. He was actually very good,
yeah,
as an announcer. So he had a nice long career in the business. Got to give him that credit.
Yeah, you know, definitely. And I don't remember, he's been, how long has he been deceased now? When did he, 2005. I didn't realize it had been that long.
A long time, huh? 15, 16 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, so, but yeah, you know, but yeah, definitely a guy. Yeah, he was always a really good heel, I remember, in the AWA.
He was, yeah.
So.
As with most wrestlers, he competed on both sides of the fence, but I think he was better, as you pointed out, much better as a heel than as a face.
Yeah, I think I rarely do guys go through their career with just one persona. There's usually a good persona and a bad persona. So.
Yeah, some of the ones that I watched in the 50s never changed their style, face, heel. Like Pat O'Connor, I don't think ever was a heel. Or Snyder.
Yeah, no,
or,
you know, I think the one guy I remember was Ricky. I don't believe Ricky Steamboat's ever been a heel. I believe
no,
he's always been a baby fade.
That's right. And Tito Santana also, I believe.
Yeah. So, you know, that's, yeah, just, you know, there are, yeah, but nowadays, you know, God, they change from week to week. So.
Yeah, it's hard to keep track. Plus, as you pointed out, it's hard to keep track of the name changes. When you know of a promising wrestler and he switches to a new company, well, he's got to have a new name, and it was never like that before.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really annoying when that happens.
Yeah, well, you know, that's where copywriting and merchandise sales and all that crap come in, because you know WWE wants to own all that stuff.
Yeah, the wrestler who was big in Impact and had a good career in the independent circuits, Eli Drake. Is now under a new name in NXT.
and they gave him one of the stupidest names ever. He's like L.A. Knight or something. It's like, good Lord, who the...
Exactly right. And it's funny, the first time I saw him, I said, I know this guy's familiar. Who is he? And then, oh, that's who it is.
Yeah, and, you know, there are guys who are smart enough, you know, to copyright their names. You know, like CM Punk owned the right to his name, so when he left, he got to take it with him. While Christian doesn't own the Christian name, he does own Christian Cage. So obviously it's relatable to who he is. So that makes it easier. You know, and I know Cody just got the Rhodes last name back because WWE decided to not renew the copyright on it. Because he wasn't allowed to use that because they copyrighted Cody Rhodes.
If someone like Kurt Angle, for example, which is his real name, competes for another organization, it can't be a copyright on that because it's his real name. Same thing with the Fuzz,
right? You can't copyright anybody's real name.
Or Brock Lesnar, you know, for example, or any of those guys. If they go to another company, they can still wrestle under their real name.
Right. Well, that's why, you know, when you see when Terry Funk popped up in WWE, they called him, like, Chainsaw Charlie or something stupid like that.
Ridiculous.
But when Angle went to Impact, he was Kurt Angle. There's no issue with that. So.
You know, it was not his real name. Kerry Von Erich had a funny name when he wrestled in WWE, the Texas Tornado, instead of Kerry Von Erich.
Yeah, because they didn't want to use the name. So.
Yeah, that's right. Chainsaw Charlie, now that I think about it, that's right. That was another great gimmick by the WWE.
Yeah, and, you know, it's all done for, you know, basically merchandise. So they can put it on merchandise and they can, you know, there's no real claim by the wrestler. They get a percentage of it. So.
Did you ever use another name other than your real one when you competed?
No, I've had various incarnations of it. You know, it's been shorter, longer, you know, however it's worked out. But, yeah, my real name got added when the promotion I was working for started running in the area I lived in so they could get people to show up. And then it just kind of stuck after that. So.
You didn't always use the lumberjack persona. Sometimes yes, sometimes no.
No, actually, I've always been a lumberjack, but it morphed in towards the end there. We had a tag team come in, and unfortunately, they were uncreative enough and decided they were going to be the lumberjacks. And it's like, guys, I've been using this name for 15 years, and we're not associated. I said, they're going to think we're associated. So the guy I was teaming with at the time came up with the Big Jack because I was bigger than both those guys, so it's basically the Big Lumberjack. So it morphed into that, and then that just stuck. So.
Yeah, I used that for a long time.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it was just kind of like, you know, and if, you know, I mean, I didn't own the name, and there have been a billion lumberjacks, so.
Yeah, but a lot of them had the lumberjack gimmick, like Yukon Eric supposedly was a lumberjack, and the late Yukon Eric, and of course, Moose Cholik became a form of a lumberjack. Yukon Moose Cholik, he morphed into, so not that a... Even Joe, did Joe LaDuke ever use that lumberjack role too? You knew him. You teamed with him. I'm trying to.
You know, I think he used it. I want to say, did he team with his brother for a short period of time? They may have been the lumberjacks, but I don't think he ever used it on his own. But he was always, you know, he was dressed like a lumberjack and,
right, exactly.
You know, that kind of thing. So, you know, it was clear, you know, like I know when Matt Bourne popped up in I think it was still WCW, he used the name Big Josh and he dressed like a lumberjack.
Yeah.
So.
That was kind of an embarrassing situation because most knowledgeable wrestling fans knew who he was, and then didn't he go through some skits when he's training in the ring, training to be a wrestler, and never wrestled before, and didn't know how to take a bump and all that good stuff.
So, yeah, you know, and they do that, you know, quite a bit with guys. Remember, WWE did that with Eugene, who was actually a very accomplished indie wrestler that basically everybody knew. And he came in as, you know, a mentally slow, you know, guy who was basically a wrestling savant but had never been trained to wrestle.
Yeah, and that, I believe, was Nick Dinsmore, who was very successful in the South, if I'm not mistaken. I think he had a good run down in Memphis and some other areas down there.
So, yeah, no, he had a pretty long, and I believe he still is out there wrestling. But, yeah, he had a really long and, you know, successful indie career before they hit on him. So,
I
think he was on the 7 or 8 years before WWE signed him.
Yeah, he had a long career. He had a long career.
And then you bring up, and you just basically ask the fans to be stupid. Pretend that they don't know.
Yeah, there's so many obvious things. I remember watching the show out of Bridgeport before your time back in 1960. It was Capital Promotion, which later, of course, became the WWWF. And at intermission, there was an African-American guy sitting at ringside. It looked like he had a nice physique. And the announcer at the time, Ray Morgan, said, "Hey, I'm going to bring this fan in. He's been watching the matches. You look like you have a good physique. You want to show it to me?" And of course, he took off his shirt and he was jacked to the nines, and then he started wrestling as if he had never wrestled before, which, of course, was completely untrue. He had been in the business for years. But they try to pull this off on the public, the people watching wrestling. And are the fans missled that easily?
Yeah, well, you know, back then you could do it. You know, it wasn't guys you saw on national TV, and they probably just worked regionally. So, you know, but now, I mean, guys are on TV, and I mean, at least like AEW doesn't really try to hide these guys have wrestled in other places. But, you know, WWE still gets to the point where a guy pops up and they act like they found him.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that's just, you know, like to me as a fan, you know, that was insulting. And I remember, you know, I would have friends who only watched one program or the other, be it WWE or WCW, and they would be raving about this guy. Oh, you know, I just saw, you know, Scott Hall. Scott Hall just showed up, and he was this and he was that. And I'm like, dumbass, he's been Razor Ramon for the past, you know, 6 years, 8 years, whatever.
Wasn't he the Diamond Stud and American Coyote before that also?
Yeah. Yep, he was. Yeah, he was the Diamond Stud. He was American Starship Coyote. He teamed with Dan Spivey.
That was in the AWA.
God, did he have? I'm trying to remember. I thought he had even one more name before he became Razor Ramon, but he's wandered through a few of them. So, yeah, well, apparently,
yeah,
I just looked it up here. Apparently, his indie name was Texas Scott. So.
Well, even Mark Calloway, The Undertaker, called himself, I think, Texas Red, didn't he, in the early part of his career?
Yeah. So, yeah, he was, you know, I thought, you know, I know he was you know, he was part of that Twin Towers thing in WCW with Sid Vicious. And I think was he Texas Red there, or did they give him another name?
Another name. And the Skyscrapers are very popular in WCW. That was what, Sid Vicious and Dan Spivey, with Teddy Long managing them?
Well, I believe it started out as Callis, because he was Mean Mark. And I think they were the original group, but then he left. And I believe Spivey took the spot. He wasn't with them, the group, for very long. He just made a couple appearances for them.
It was interesting when they were the Skyscrapers. They were supposed to be a heel team, but the fans cheered them.
Yeah. Well, you know, at the time they were doing that, that was new. You didn't see the two gigantic guys team up like that. So, you know, it was kind of interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting how some of these guys morphed from being heels to faces. For example, the Road Warriors, when they were heels all over the country, for some reason, when they started wrestling in Chicago, they were being cheered. And of course, they said they were from Chicago, which is not true. They're from Minneapolis. And eventually that became the norm all around the country, not just Chicago. They started cheering for the Road Warriors now. And then, of course, they never changed their style. They just changed their opponents from faces to heels.
And that's one of those things that happens to, you know, quite a few guys. You know, the styles don't really change when they go back and forth, but, you know, it just does this guy, you know, and that's like the weirdest thing. Like I read that when you do the WWE thing where they call it the Thunderdome and you're on the big screen, you know, the fans, you're given instructions on who to cheer and who to boo.
Yeah. What happens if you disobey the instructions?
Yeah, you know, that I don't know. I you know, once I read that, I was just kind of disgusted with it. And I'm like, really? We're not even letting fans make their own decisions? I was like, yeah, I'm done with that. So
it's funny, in AEW, when Chris Jericho and his group comes in, the marks in the audience are singing. What are they singing? Is that a Fozzy song they're singing? They go through all that and switch to the audience singing this song, when kind of Jericho has kind of a smirk on his face, and I guess he's reverting. They're reverting back to faces now. Is that the latest storyline?
They are a face group now because they're feuding with the what is that group called? The Inner or the Pinnacle?
Oh,
they're the Inner
Pinnacle.
Circle.
That's
feuding with the Pinnacle. So yeah, they're face, and this is the first time Jericho's been a face in AEW. But they sang his song no matter what he was.
Yeah,
so,
it didn't make any difference. It didn't make any difference,
yeah.
And they were really marking out to him. And I guess I never thought he was a super great wrestler, but he knows the business. He really knows the business.
Oh.
Back and forth.
Yeah, he's Good Lord, he's been around for I don't even know how long now.
I say close to 30 years at least he's been in the business, which is hard to believe.
Well, they did the celebration. Was it 30 years they did the video thing for him in AEW?
Right.
I think it was 30 years. So,
yeah, I remember when he first national program when he was in WCW, I think that's when he was exposed nationally. But prior to that, I guess he had competed for Stu Hart in Canada and other areas.
I know he got a really good break when Cornette had that Smoky Mountain promotion that everybody really loved. You know, he teamed with Lance Storm there, and they did really well. He had a quick stint with ECW, and then he went into WCW, but, you know, they only pushed him as a cruiserweight.
Yeah,
so it wasn't until he got to go to Japan for a couple years where he really hit it big, and then WWE brought him in and basically made him a legitimate heavyweight. So,
man, he can still go because some of those matches when that Japan promotion was on Axis, he would go 30, 35 minutes in some of those matches from Japan. So that's pretty good. You don't see too many guys going that long in the ring anymore.
You know, he was just back there in, 2017. They did the big angle where he wore the hood. I believe it was his it might have been his Lionheart hood that he wore in Japan, and he attacked Kenny Omega. And, you know, that was just over huge there. And, you know, he hung around there for a little bit before AEW started. So,
yeah, are you surprised at how successful AEW seems to be in just a year, year and a half of operation?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if surprised is the right word because, you know, they're such a nice alternative to WWE, and they have to figure out how to continue to do that. You know, especially now that they're adding another program, they're adding a second program called Rampage. So, you know, hopefully they can keep it fresh. But, you know, they're using, you know, they were guys everybody knows. You know, everybody knew Cody. You know, everybody, if you're a wrestling fan, everybody knew the Young Bucks. You know, everybody knew Kenny Omega, obviously Jericho. So they were bringing in guys that people were very familiar with, you know, unlike Impact, who doesn't have that cash flow. And they have to find, basically, it's all indie guys. And then they have to wait for guys to get fired. So
yeah. But they'll be moving back to the Flagship Station in another year or so, I think. They're moving them to TBS next year.
Yeah.
They apparently renegotiated their television contract with TBS already. So they're moving to still on Wednesdays, but they're just switching stations. So yeah, they're doing a fantastic job. So
they are, and we'll see how long it lasts. And now that it looks like the pandemic is on the wane, I wonder if both of those organizations, both WWE and AEW, are going to start doing house shows again and having live audiences.
Yes, they've actually both announced dates. I believe July is when they're both planning on going back out on the road. So,
yeah, I'm sure everybody is looking forward to that, and it's unfortunate, by the way. And I'm going to segue quickly to baseball. I think the White Sox have a 3-game series at home against the Yankees, and it's too bad that the date for the increased 60% capacity won't be until next week, because it would have been interesting to see what kind of a crowd they would have drawn for that series.
So, well, that's okay that you switched, because we're going that route anyways, because I didn't want to forget 2 weeks in a row. We forgot predictions last week, so I want to get them in today, and we'll start. Unfortunately, there's no basketball or football, so we're doing all baseball. And we'll start with tonight. The Cubs are at St. Louis. Kyle Hendricks starts for the Cubs, and Carlos Martinez starts for the Cardinals. We're going over under here on Kyle Hendricks. Does he pitch over or under 6 2/3 innings?
I would say under.
All right. And then you mentioned we have the White Sox are in New York. They're actually on the road to play the Yankees.
They are on the road. Okay.
I think they were home too, but they're on the road. So we're going. Let's go. It's Carlos Rodon against Jordan Montgomery. Obviously, two pretty good offenses. Let's go over under 8.5 runs scored in the game. What do you got?
I would say over on that one.
All right. So, and then we'll move to tomorrow. Get a couple game picks in here. We got again, obviously, Cubs and Cardinals. It's your guy, Adalbert Alonso, or Alonze Lay is how they're pronouncing it. I don't even know. He gets the start for the Cubs, and Miles Mikolas makes the start for the Cardinals. Who wins this game tomorrow?
Well, I don't care who's pitching. I pick St. Louis to win the game.
All right. And then we'll jump to the Sunday White Sox game. And we have Dallas Keuchel for the White Sox and Jameson Taillon for the Yankees. Give me your winner there.
I will go for the Yankees in that one.
Ooh, I thought maybe you were taking the White Sox, but all right. So, yes, and just we catch everybody up. You are 500, 31-31. So you need to get rolling here.
Hey, I'm on an adverse roll lately.
Yes. So we'll have to get you to bounce back here so people can start winning all their money off you again.
Yeah, well, of course, if they just pick the opposite of what my recent selections have been, they'd be cashing big time.
So, yeah, and it is a, you know, full Major League Baseball schedule tonight. Everybody plays. FS1 even has a game. They have the Brewers at the Reds. So you can definitely, you know, if you want to watch baseball or you like baseball, you probably have quite a few ways to watch it tonight. So.
And both of those teams, by the way, have been rather disappointing this season. The Reds even more so than the Brewers.
Yeah. So yeah, the Reds have been they're almost an enigma. It keeps looking like they you know, it looked like they wanted to rebuild because they were getting rid of pitching right and left, but they kept all their hitting, which didn't make a lot of sense. So I don't know.
Yeah, their pitching has not been very good this season.
No, you know, and I'm just trying to figure out how it would have been if they'd actually traded Luis Castillo and Sonny Gray like was rumored in the offseason.
They're not that far ahead of Pittsburgh. I mean, a couple of games ahead of Pittsburgh for the basement.
Yeah, one and a half. 1.5 games out of the cellar. It's their turn down there instead of the Cubs. So
I'm wondering if the Cubs, for example, are swept over the weekend by St. Louis, would that impact their decision to restart rebuild, going into the full-flown rebuilding mode? Or is it too soon?
Yeah, you know what? That was a topic on MLB Network earlier, is if that was to happen, would they start looking to make moves? And, you know, I mean, in all honesty, I don't think it matters where they are in the standings. Chris Bryant has to go. You've got to get something for him. You can't just let him walk away. But,
no,
yeah, I guess, you know, other than that, I don't know.
If and when they deal Chris Bryant, he certainly has increased the value that they should get in return based on what he's done this season.
You know, you would think, I mean, obviously the hindrance is, this is it for him, you know, because being a Scott Boras client, he's going on the free agent market. So, you know, I mean, so depending on where you send him, if it's not a team that is willing to carry a large payroll, you know, there's a very little chance they're going to be able to bring him back. So that could hurt it in the end.
Have you heard anything about which teams are interested in acquiring Chris Bryant?
No, you know, rumor-wise, I haven't heard anybody reaching out to the Cubs since really early. Apparently, the Yankees made a call on Anthony Rizzo. But that's been the only real anything that I've heard come up. And, you know, being the fact that it's just May, that's not a big surprise. You know, but I do wonder, like a team like the Mets, who has 16 people on the IL, you know, and they're still hanging on to first place, you got to wonder if maybe they've got to start being a little more active and trying to get some help, because it's going to be tough to continue to hold that with all these injuries. You know, they just put Pete Alonso on the IL today, so they could use the power bat.
Yeah, and both of those teams have the financial money behind them to actually sit down and talk to Boras and say, let's sign Chris Bryant to a 7-year deal for $100 million.
Right. You know, it's like, okay, we're willing to bring him in. What are we talking contract-wise? Let's get this going. You know, and if Boras gets the money he wants, I'm sure he would sign. So
no doubt about that. And they both those teams you mentioned have the money to do that.
Definitely. But all right, well, let's start our weekend. All right, have a good weekend.